COVID has changed a lot of things for many people when it comes to work and home and leisure and even the law. Many WGN listeners have reached out over the last few months to ask about their landlord-tenant issues, mostly what happens when I don't pay rent, can there be evictions, what's going on, what's going to happen when all of these laws and the moratorium on paying rent, on the, I'm sorry, the moratorium on evictions is lifted. And with us to talk about these issues is Robert Kahn of Sanford Kahn, the law firm that has been for 47 years concentrating in the practice of landlord-tenant law, representing residential and commercial landlords, property management companies, and property owners in all aspects of landlord-tenant law. Welcome to the show, Robert. How are you?
Good. Good evening, Karen.
Good to have you. We get so many questions about these things, but let's just talk basically about leasing. You're going to rent an apartment. Should you have a lease at all times? And if you don't, what happens?
Generally, you're going to want a lease. The reason is so you know your rights and obligations. A lot of landlords don't do leases, but at the same time, it gives the tenant and the landlord more flexibility. But a landlord can't enforce something that's not in writing. So if you have a dog and no dogs are allowed, they can't say that unless there's a written agreement. However, if you don't have a written lease, they could terminate your lease at any time upon giving you a 30-day notice and have you evicted.
So that's what I hear a lot. I see people who may have been renting a house or renting an apartment in a small building, and they've been there for years, sometimes 15 years, and all of a sudden someone buys the building, okay, and now they say you have to get out. And the person might have been there for years and years. And what are your rights then in that event?
If you don't have a written lease, your only rights are you're going to have 30 days to vacate. The landlord can't change the locks, and they have to serve you with a 30-day notice generally. If you don't have a lease, they have to serve you with a 30-day notice, and then they have to file an eviction case. And an eviction case is going to take at least a month or two back before all this craziness, but right now a landlord can't file a case against you until the moratorium is lifted.
Let's talk about that moratorium. Is this a state, is this a local, or is this a federal moratorium?
Yes. It's all of them. Right now there's a state one implemented by the Governor Pritzker that's going to expire on September 19. The chief judge in Cook County also extended the moratorium until September 19. I'm sure a lot of people heard last week the CDC suggested a moratorium until the end of the year. My guess is that the governor is going to extend the moratorium on evictions until the end of the year in line with the CDC. So the only way a landlord can evict you right now is if you threaten the health and safety of other tenants or if you're causing property damage. Otherwise, they can't do anything against you until the moratorium is lifted.
So what does that mean for paying rent?
You still have to pay your rent no matter what. However, if you don't pay rent, they can't do much to you. They could serve you with a notice of termination, and when the moratorium is lifted, they can have you evicted. But, I mean, it's unfortunate for a lot of landlords right now whose hands are tied. They can't do anything legally if you don't pay any rent. Now, if and when you have to go to court, the court's not going to look favorably upon you if you offer the landlord no monies.
We're talking to Robert Kahn from the law firm of Sanford Kahn. If you have a question about landlord-tenant law from either side, I'm sure he can answer it. Give us a call here at 312-981-7200. So what's going to happen when this moratorium gets lifted? I mean, there's going to be thousands and thousands of evictions filed. Is that right?
Yeah, probably. right now, usually before all of this, my firm filed 400 to 500 cases a month. So we filed probably more than anyone else in the state. Right now, we can't file those unless it's a commercial case and, like I said, threatens the health and safety. Once the moratorium is lifted, we're going to have a lot of cases to file. When you take away a landlord's rights for 8 months, it's going to build up. Now, a lot of tenants are working with landlords and vice versa to try to make it through this whole process. But for the tenants who say, I'm not paying my rent and you can't make me, I'm going to be seeing them in court once this moratorium is lifted.
And then what will that tenant be responsible for? And what are some of the pitfalls of doing that, of taking that position that, hey, you can't evict me, so I'm just not going to pay rent and I'm just going to let this ride out?
Well, you're buying time, but it's going to mess up your credit when the landlord seeks to evict you. A judgment is going to be entered against you for all the unpaid rents, plus costs and maybe attorney's fees. Now, once again, a lot of people might not care right now, but once this moratorium is lifted, They're going to care. There's going to be a lot of evictions because there's a lot of people who aren't paying their rent. Now, when I ask my clients generally what percent of tenants aren't paying their rent, right now it's about 6%. And when I asked them before all this, what was it? It was 4 to 5. So it's not as widespread as you would think, but there are a certain number of people who are saying, I'm not paying and there's nothing you could do about it. Now, in Chicago, the mayor passed the COVID protection ordinance that requires the landlord and the tenant to try to work something out before an eviction case is filed. So I always suggest the tenants and landlords try to work it out amongst yourself, because if a landlord can't file a case and a tenant can't afford the rent, there has to be a happy medium.
And I'm actually very surprised that it's that few people who are just not paying rent. I would have guessed it would have been extraordinary amount. But when we come back, we're going to be taking your legal questions. I know some people are already calling in. Rob is going to be gracious enough to answer your landlord-tenant questions. We're talking to Robert Kahn of the law firm of Sanford Kahn. And this is the Karen Conti Show on WGN. We're talking landlord-tenant law here. If you have any questions about landlord-tenant law, evictions, or anything like that, give us a call here, 312-981-7200. We're here with Robert Kahn, who's the premier landlord-tenant lawyer in the city of Chicago. Robert, thank you for holding on. We've got a call, Alan in Chicago, who has a question. Hi, Alan. Welcome to the show.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Sure.
I was wondering about forbearance. What does that allow the tenant to do? I had the impression that you could not pay rent for 90 days. Is that true? Does the landlord have to accept that?
No, that's totally false. There's no such thing for a tenant of forbearance. There's no, and it doesn't even matter if the landlord got a forbearance on his mortgage. There's nothing at all in Illinois that allows a tenant not to pay any rent. Now, if a landlord agrees to it and puts it in writing, that's one thing. But no, there's nothing in the statute that allows a tenant not to pay rent for 3 months.
Thank you for the call, Alan. Thank you.
Thanks.
Now, let me just ask you, Rob, if you work out a deal with your landlord and you say, listen, I'm going to pay, say, 75% of my rent, and then when this is all over and I get my job back and I'll have some more money or maybe my tax refund or what have you, and there's an agreement, should that be put in writing between the landlord and tenant?
Always. You always want any agreements in writing, and it doesn't have to be a lawyer drafting it up. It could be a simple piece of paper where the landlord and the tenant both sign off on it. Now, keep in mind, in Chicago, the Lightfoot Ordinance, as we call it in the industry, the COVID Protection Ordinance, says that a landlord has to discuss with the tenant their options. And one of the options is a payment agreement that gives the tenant 60 days to come current on all their rent, or it allows the tenant just to break their lease if they so wish and move out if the landlord agrees. Or the landlord can agree to reduce the rent, but any agreement you have in a landlord-tenant situation, you want it in writing. And I always tell our clients, if it's not in writing, it does not exist.
Always good advice. Let's just say you want to break your lease for some reason. You're in a place, maybe you get a different job, and you don't want to be there anymore. How would you go about, as a tenant, breaking that lease to get it, to try to reduce whatever costs or damages or financial harm to yourself?
If there's not a legal basis to break your lease, you obviously can move out, but you may be responsible for every month that the unit is not re-rented. Now, once again, in Chicago and most places, a landlord has an obligation to try to mitigate their damages. Meaning, if I move out today on September 5 and my lease isn't up until March, the landlord has to do their best to try to re-rent the place. A landlord cannot accelerate and charge you for every rent every month that the unit sits vacant until it actually sits vacant. So I inform my clients, if someone moves out today, you can't charge them 6 months in advance, because for all you know, you might re-rent the place in October, and then the tenant who vacates only owes September's rent because you can't get double rent from a landlord. A landlord only can charge a single person rent for a single unit.
Should the tenant try to sublet the property himself, and does he have a right to do that, generally speaking?
Yes, they always have the right to sublease, and in Chicago, a landlord has to accept a reasonable sublease. If you want to protect yourself as a tenant and you don't want to pay a lease termination fee, you should find a new tenant to take your place.
Okay, and that's always good to know. Let's go to John in Libertyville. Hi, John. You're on with Rob Kahn on the Karen County Show. Hi.
Hey, Rob. How you doing? We've got guarantors on about 90% of our residential leases and some on commercial leases, believe it or not. We work really hard to get them, and we're very, it's a real good thing. But it's an interesting idea. What if we have issues with the tenant? What are our rights of going back against the guarantors?
The guarantors guarantee the lease. They are on the hook for
sure.
it. Now,
sure.
you can't
yes,
file
sir.
Against them in eviction court because of the law, but absolutely, they are on the hook for every month that the tenant does not pay rent. That's why people love guarantors in a lot of commercial and residential. The guarantor, and that's the leverage that a landlord has. They can reach out to the guarantor and say, listen, the tenant's not paying. If they don't pay, I'm going to come to you and look to you for the money. And most of the time, the guarantor is more solvent, so to speak, than the tenant.
Yes.
Thank you for the call, John. That's a very good question. I appreciate it. You know, I want to ask you, Rob, kids going back to school, some kids going back to college, and I know a lot of parents are signing apartment leases and the like. What damages would a tenant have for, what are the kinds of damages that a landlord could deduct money for, and what can't he deduct money for at the end of the lease?
They can deduct money for any unpaid rents. They could charge from the security deposit any damages that are beyond wear and tear. I always tell tenants, make sure you document when you vacate, take photos of the apartment. But a landlord has to account for the security deposit. They can't just not return it. Now, if you're under the RLTO, which is in Chicago, the Residential Landlord Tenant Ordinance, you have 30 days to return the deposit with paid receipts showing of the receipts that you paid to fix the apartment. And if you don't, a tenant can sue the landlord for failing to return it and get their attorney's fees. So a landlord can deduct anything from the security deposit that they can show that the tenant caused the damages.
And when you say over wear and tear, so if you've got white carpeting and the carpeting's dirty from walking around because people walk around with dirty feet, so is that something that you the landlord could charge for a carpet cleaning, or is that would that be considered wear and tear?
No, I think they could. Now, once again, in these situations, I always ask my clients, how old is the carpet? If the carpet is 5 years old and you have to replace it because of the tenant, it's iffy. But if the carpet is new when the tenant moves out and they need to get new carpet, I think they could charge the tenant for the damages. But once again, I think it's always important for everyone, the tenant and the landlord, to take photos of the carpet when they move in and when they move out to show what damages were there and were not there. But a landlord can absolutely charge a tenant for carpet cleaning if it's, once again, beyond wear and tear. And that's it's a case-specific situation. I can't say always or never, but it's common sense, and you got to take a look at the carpet and see. Now, if the tenant lived there for 5-10 years, I don't think it's right for a landlord to charge them for carpet cleaning if the tenant lived there for a long time, because the age of a carpet shouldn't be longer than, 5 to 10 years.
Got it. Makes sense. Let's go to Jim in Oak Park. Hi, Jim. Welcome to WGN. You're on with Robert Kahn.
Hi there. I was calling. We own a second house that we currently rent out. And we've had the same renter for about 12 years. And it's basically on a month-to-month lease. We don't have a lease with the tenant. But now we're short on cash and we want to sell the house. Is there a letter I need to draft? What should I do to move forward with that process?
Good question.
You need to serve the tenant with a 30-day notice terminating their month-to-month lease. Where is the property located, in Chicago or outside of Chicago?
Outside of Chicago.
So that notice? Okay, so I always look at things, whether it's Chicago and outside Chicago, because the Chicago laws are the strictest. But what I would say is you send them a letter saying, dear Charlie, your lease is month-to-month. Effective October 31st, I'm terminating your month-to-month tenancy. Now, not to get hyper-technical, but I believe any 30-day notice should end at the last day of the following month. So if I want to terminate today, it wouldn't be for October 5. It'd be for October 31st. And it should be in writing and it should be hand-delivered to the tenant, terminating his month-to-month tenancy effective October 1. Now, keep in mind, if he doesn't move out on November 1, there's nothing you can do until this moratorium is lifted.
Got it.
I see.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you for the call. And again, I think, Rob, would you say that the good thing to do is just to talk to the tenant, maybe work something out, get the agreement to say, I don't want to have to do all this work in court, and I'm sure you don't want to defend it, and let's come up with something that works out for both of us.
Yeah, Karen, it doesn't usually work that way, unfortunately.
I'm an optimist.
In theory, but no, generally, no. I always tell my clients, never take the tenant or the landlord's word for it. Because unless it's, you know, in writing, and even then it's iffy, no, I'd protect your rights and get everything in writing.
Let me ask you one final question, and I get this a lot, smoking. There are still apartment buildings and even condo buildings that allow people to smoke in their units, and that certain people are very sensitive to it, and it comes right through the cracks and whatever. And what are your rights if you don't want someone to smoke in the building and they're smoking and they're ruining your enjoyment of your property?
And you're the tenant?
Yes.
Your options are somewhat limited because even in the smoke-free addendum, the landlord is not a guarantor that it's not going to have smoking. So anything that disturbs other residents is generally a lease violation. So it doesn't matter if it's a smoking building or not a smoking building, but if it's violating and disturbing other people, the landlord has the right to evict the other person. But if you're a tenant and smoke's coming into the unit, all you could do is complain to the landlord. And now if there's damages and things like that, a lot of times you could write them a letter saying, if this isn't fixed within 14 days, I'm going to deduct it from my rent. But smoking is one of those gray areas that I don't think you could deduct rent for smoking. All you could do is complain. And if they don't do anything, don't renew your lease and move out when the lease expires.
Robert Kahn, thank you so much for joining us. Robert is with the law firm of Sanford Kahn. Could you give us quickly your contact information?
Sure. Our website is www.sanfordconllp.com. My number at the office is 312-263-6778.
Thank you so much for joining us. And when we come back, we are going to be taking your general legal questions here, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200, on any legal topic you might have. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN.